squad cars. The story you're about to hear is true. Details are supplied from the official case files by the South African police. Only names and places have been changed to protect innocent people involved.
Johannesburg, January the 4th, 11 p.m. It's a Saturday night, and many of the places of recreation and entertainment in the city are still doing a brisk trade. Some of them are beginning to empty now, as the revelers search their pockets for a few cents to take home the Sunday papers, whereas others are only just beginning to reach the busy period of their evening. At his hotel, Norman Lee telephones for a taxi and orders the driver to take him to the Golden Parrot nightclub. He's only just arrived in Johannesburg, but he knows the city well. He also knows the various places where he will be able to meet old friends, as well as testing his luck on illegal gambling tables. At the roulette table at the Golden Parrot, James Logan has been placing a few small bets, watched by a close friend, Billy Thompson. Logan usually gambles a great deal, but he is not betting seriously at the moment. After a while, Norman Lee is spotted by Thompson, who points him out to Logan.
Have you got any honest one?
No, not this time. Why do you ask? Aren't you watching?
Oh, I have been. I just saw an old friend. I didn't know he was in Joburg.
What does he do? Is he in the business?
He is, and he isn't fussy what he does. Bit of an all-rounder.
They don't usually get very far these days. This is the age of the specialist.
Hey, he's coming over this way. I think you ought to meet him.
All right, Billy boy. Anything you say. Right.
Hey, Norman, how are you?
Who's that? Billy! Billy Thompson! Hey, great to see you.
Nice to see you, Norman. Just arrived.
Yes, 2 days ago. I was hoping to bump into a few old mates up here.
Well, you couldn't have picked a better place. Oh, do you know James Logan?
No, pleased to... Logan? Aren't you rather well-known?
That's right. I do seem to have a passing acquaintanceship with most people that matter. I think I'll try the even reds this time.
I've heard a lot about you, Mr. Logan. Well, I'd very much like to work with you sometime.
I think we might be able to arrange that. Billy seems to have a high opinion of you. It just so happens that I do have a little project in mind at the moment. It could be very lucrative for all of us.
The Golden Parrot Club, Logan says no more about his intended project. And the three men spend the next 2 hours playing poker before they leave the tables and enjoy a drink at the bar.
Cheers. May the future bring as much success as the past.
Cheers. Cheers. Well, I'm very pleased I met you both. I was beginning to wonder whether I'd done the right thing in coming up here.
Why did you come, Norman? Oh, I thought you were doing very well in Cape Town.
Oh, I wasn't doing badly, but, unfortunately, things were starting to get rather warm.
In what way?
Oh, nothing specific. Don't worry, they haven't got anything on me. I thought it was time to pull out before they did have.
Very wise. It's the best method of all. Work a place until you start to get known and then move on. They say that a house is a type of security, but it's not for us. The best security we can have is a healthy bank balance, a fast car, and an account with an airline.
Anything but an house.
How's your bank balance at present, Norman? Could you do with a good payday?
I could always do with a good payday. What have you got in mind?
Something for tomorrow night. Nothing dangerous. Just a nice, quiet collection from a very wealthy old gentleman. The type of job that's admirably suited for a Sunday. 6 days shall they labor, and on the seventh they shall be relieved of their takings.
Yeah.
What's the plan? Do you want to give us the details?
The details? No, my dear Lee. I'll give you those tomorrow afternoon before we do the job.
Oh, it always works this way. It's nothing unusual.
If I gave you the details now, well, who knows what might happen to you before tomorrow night. Come, drink up. Saturday night funsters are leaving. It's time for us to do a little serious gambling.
Don't you ever get bothered by the law up here?
Well, not usually. I don't think they know what goes on up here.
Don't kid yourself, Billy boy. They know all right. It suits them to leave the place open, that's all. It suits them.
In car 9, Sergeant Arthur Harris and Constable Jack Russell turn off Commissioner Street and continue to cruise around the town center. They drive up Eloff Street, turn east into Bree Street, and then retrace their route by turning south into Nugget Street. Although they are talkative, their minds do not stray from the job in hand, and they are constantly on the alert for any signs of trouble or illegal activity.
This seems fairly quiet for a Saturday night. I suppose everybody's rather broke up to Christmas and New Year.
Yes, Sarge. I should think most people have had enough celebrating for the time being.
You're probably right, Constable. We could do with an easy night to bring the averages a bit closer to normal. We've been run off our feet these past 2 weeks.
Yes. That place seems to be doing all right, Sarge. What's it called again?
Oh, the Golden Parrot. Ever been inside there?
No. I'm not much of a nightclub man myself.
Well, that isn't exactly a nightclub. It's more of a gambling club, you know. Chamois, poker, roulette, all that sort of thing.
Really? Isn't that illegal?
Yes, it is. Very illegal.
Well, why didn't we close it down, then?
Well, it suits us to leave it open, Constable. There are certain people that we like to keep tabs on. As long as places like that are in existence, we're pretty sure we know where they'll be.
I see, Sarge.
If we needed to, we could probably pick up 3/4 of the Joburg gambling world within an hour. Couldn't do that if we closed all the places like the Golden Parrot. The gamblers would be split into little groups and private house parties all over the Witwatersrand.
Yes, of course. So we turn a blind eye.
Oh, no, Constable. We don't turn a blind eye at all. We turn a very watchful eye. A very, very watchful eye.
Sunday, the 4th of January, 7 p.m. Logan and Thompson arrive at a city hotel and make their way to room 402, where Norman Lee is waiting.
7 o'clock. Bang on time, just as you said.
But of course. What's the point of stating a time at all if you don't intend to keep to it? Punctuality and promptness are not only signs of courtesy, they are the signs of a well-organized mind. I hope you will not disagree with that.
No, of course not.
Are you all set? Haven't had a change of heart?
Don't be stupid. This is business. It's what I'm here for.
Good. It'll start to get dark fairly soon. If you'll be good enough to order some coffee and sandwiches, Lee, I shall outline the plan to you both. In about half an hour's time, we shall leave here and start to put the plan into operation.
What's it worth? Oh, not that I mind, but just as a matter of interest.
I told you last night that this was very much a Sunday job. The rewards aren't great, but neither is the risk. All being well, I estimate that about half an hour from now, we should be richer by some 20,000 rands. There really are some beautiful houses in this district. Perhaps I shall buy one here. When I retire, that is.
I don't want to interfere with your plans, but don't you think we ought to wait until a bit later? There isn't very much chance of anyone having gone to bed yet.
It doesn't make very much difference. They're an old couple. Hardly be any match for the three of us.
I've seen some old boys in my time who could put up quite a fight. They'd lose out in the end, of course, but they'd cause quite a bit of havoc first. And quite a bit of noise.
Maybe, but this one won't do. He's 78. I told you before, it's a real Sunday night job.
Yeah, well, let me go over it. I drive the car right up to the house. And then we ring the bell and we all go inside. I keep an eye out of the window. Norman ties them up and then searches downstairs. You question him first and then search upstairs.
That's right. Ah. It all happens quickly. The less time we spend in the house, the better. So search with the utmost speed. No dilly-dallying. And on no account must anyone take off his stocking mask. Is that quite clear?
It's clear.
Yeah.
I won't hang about, don't you worry.
Turn off just up here, Billy. We should be there in about 2 minutes.
Good evening. Can I help you?
Good evening, Mr. Nichols. May we come inside?
Yes, but what do you want? It's not very convenient at present. I don't wish to appear rude, but...
Shut up, Grandad! Just do as you're told and you might live to see 79.
But what do you think you're doing? How dare you come barging in here like this? Now, what do you want?
We want the jewels, Mr. Nichols, and we want them quickly.
Jewels? But they're not here. My wife's taken them away with her. She's in East London. Now, look, there's about R6 in my wallet. Now, that's all. Will you please go away?
All right, put the gag on.
Now? But he hasn't told us yet.
And he won't either. Put the gag on. We'll just have to find them.
But I tell you, they're not here. We're not the sort of people...
Right,
here you go. But I
said... All right up there?
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, no, really. Oh, let's
have him back. Make him sit on the sofa.
Help
me, so here. I'm going upstairs. Okay, and hurry it up. The sooner we're out of here, the better.
At police radio headquarters, Police Constable Russell is on telephone duty. He's had a busy day and is looking forward to the end of his shift. At 9:30 p.m., he answers yet another call.
Police, Constable Russell speaking.
Hello. My name is Nichols. I've been robbed. Three men forced their way into my house and tied me up. I've only just managed to get free.
All right, Mr. Nichols. I suppose they've all left by this time, sir.
Yes, yes. About an hour ago. It was disgraceful. I've never been so insulted in my life. You've got to catch them.
Would you give me your address, please?
Oh, yes. It's Fairview House, Annandale Avenue, Parktown.
Thank you. We'll get someone over to see you straight away. How many of them were there?
Three. Oh, but there might have been more outside.
Do you have any idea what they took?
Well, that's the funny thing. The one who went upstairs said that he couldn't find anything very worthwhile. But I've just had a look, and all my wife's jewels have gone. About 30,000 rands worth.
At 10 p.m., Lieutenant Sam Brenton and Sergeant Arthur Harris arrive at the Nichols house and take a statement.
Right. Thank you very much, Mr. Nichols. I think you've given us a pretty good idea of what happened. Now, you're quite sure they weren't at all violent.
That's right. They didn't hurt me at all. But they were very firm, though.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't at all rough.
Now, do you think you'd be able to identify any of them?
I don't know. I don't think so. The mask that they wore concealed their faces very well.
Hmm. And does your wife normally keep her jewels in the house?
Oh, yes. She said that there wouldn't be much point in having them if she had to keep them at the bank.
Quite.
And I agree. I believe these things like that should be used, not hidden away somewhere.
Now, where exactly were the stones?
In our bedroom. My wife kept them in her drawer, in her dressing table.
Tell me, Mr. Nichols, when does your wife get back from East London?
Well, she's not due back until next week, but I suppose you'd want to come straight away when I phone.
Oh, no, there's not much point in her doing that. Our people down there can contact her for a full list of the missing articles. Sergeant?
Yes, sir?
I think we'd better have a look around. I don't think we'll find very much, but you never know.
Right, sir. The fingerprint department is here. They've had a look at the dressing table, but don't think there'll be any prints there. They haven't had time to check anything else yet.
The two detectives conduct a thorough examination of the house, but it is over 2 hours before anything of value is found. The investigation of the upstairs rooms proves fruitless, but a member of the fingerprint department eventually manages to collect a set of fingerprints that differs from the sample that they have taken from Mr. Nichols. These are found on a highly polished kist that stands in the dining room. They are rushed straight to the records department, where they are checked against the existing files. At 9:30 a.m. on Monday the 6th of January, Lieutenant Brenton is in his office when the telephone rings.
Hello, Lieutenant Brenton speaking.
Sergeant Harris here, sir. I'm phoning from the records department.
Making any progress?
Yes, sir. The prints that we took last night belonged to a man called Norman Lee.
Lee? No, I don't know him.
Well, he left Johannesburg about 5 years ago. His prints were taken when he was convicted on a charge of petty larceny.
Uh-huh.
He received a suspended sentence.
Yes, well, I'm afraid I'll get more than that this time. Any other information there?
Yes, sir. It's quite a lot here. But it's probably out of date by now. There's a photograph and a list of contacts. His main interests used to be football and gambling.
All right, Sergeant. Get photostats of anything that might be useful to us and then bring it up to me.
You're right, sir.
And get a move on, Sergeant. For all we know, he might have left the country by now.
But Lee hasn't left the country. He is still residing at his Johannesburg hotel. At 11 a.m., he walks into town and makes his way to a lounge bar where he has arranged to meet Thompson.
Has he found anything out yet?
Yeah, what about? What's he going to find out?
How much the job was worth. The governor said he'd got a few stones from the old girl's bedroom, but we'd have to wait until he'd made a contact before he could tell us the value.
Well, he can't have done it yet. I'll give him a chance. Don't worry, Norman. He won't cross you. I've worked with the governor for years, and he's as straight as they come.
He'd better be. I don't like being messed about. Do you know what he gave me last night? 50 rand.
That was only to be going on with. He gave me 50 rand as well. You're too suspicious, Norman. A lot of guys wouldn't have given you anything. You'd have had to wait until they got a full valuation and a price to get rid of the gear. Yeah, stuff like stones are always heavy on the discount side, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I sometimes think that fencing's a better business to be in. All jam and no risk.
Relax, Norman. You're all keyed up. I should have thought all this was kid stuff to you after a few years in wicked Cape Town. Come on, have another drink. There's nothing to worry about. Absolutely nothing.
3 p.m. Mr. William Ramsay, the manager of the hotel at which Lee is staying, reads a report of the previous night's robbery in the midday paper. He sees that the police are keen to interview a Mr. Norman Lee, who they think may be able to help them with their inquiries, and he immediately telephones the police. There is no guarantee that the Lee who is registered in his hotel is the man they are after, but checking out the information received is the very essence of police work, and the lieutenant and Detective Sergeant Harris go to the hotel vestibule and wait.
Do you really think this could be the man we're after, sir?
Well, I know that it could, Sergeant. The big question's whether or not it is.
Yes, but if it was him, he wouldn't register in his own name, would he, sir?
It depends. Registering in a false name isn't always as easy as it sounds. Well, it's difficult to sign checks, and it requires quite a lot of explaining to any friends or relations who may want to contact you.
Yeah, I suppose you're right, sir. Even so, I would have thought that... Wait, there, sir.
What?
Just coming through the door. That could be him.
Yes. I think you're right, Sergeant. Come on, let's find out. Excuse me, sir.
Yeah? What can I do for you?
We're trying to contact Mr. Norman Lee.
Oh? Oh. Well, you found him. What do you want?
We're from the CID.
Police?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Well, yes?
Well, I wonder if you'd mind answering a few questions.
What sort of questions? I've done nothing wrong. I'm on holiday.
But you used to live here, didn't you?
Yes, I did. How do you know that?
We know quite a lot about you, Lee. And we're going to find out quite a lot more.
Lee is taken to police headquarters where he denies any knowledge whatsoever of the previous evening's robbery. Nevertheless, the evidence of the fingerprints is enough for Lieutenant Brenton to issue an arrest warrant, and Lee is committed for trial with the police successfully opposing bail. Thompson is the first to hear of this and rushes to find Logan at the Golden Parrot nightclub.
I don't know how they got on to him. I can't understand it.
You recommended him, Billy. Looks as though you've made a mistake.
It wasn't my fault. I didn't know this was going to happen.
Maybe not, but it has. It puts both of us in a very nasty position. Your friend might decide to shop us. Then we've had it.
He wouldn't do that. I know he wouldn't. Norman wouldn't cross his worst enemy.
Listen, Billy. The police don't get onto people without good reason, nor do they oppose bail without good reason. Lee must have been inside before. I wouldn't have got on to him this quickly.
He hasn't been inside. He got a suspended sentence a while ago.
Why didn't you tell me that before? I thought you said he was clean.
Well, I meant that he wasn't on the run. I thought you knew that.
Must I spend my life surrounded by idiots? I must have pulled about 12 or 15 jobs here without the slightest suspicion of any trouble. Then this friend of yours comes in with us and he gets himself nicked the first time.
I know. It's unfortunate, but there's nothing you can do about it now.
Oh, yes, there is. First of all, I'll have to go and see him.
What? Why, isn't that a bit risky?
Not really. It's the lesser of two evils. If I don't go and reassure him, we'll probably find ourselves inside as well.
When are you going?
As soon as possible.
Lee Logan engages Joseph Farrow to defend Lee. Farrow is one of the most experienced lawyers in the country. He is also one of the most expensive, a fact that does not go unnoticed by Lieutenant Brenton.
Farrow doesn't work for peanuts, Sergeant. Norman Lee can't afford that sort of money. Now, I'd like to know who's paying Mr. Farrow's account.
Well, it shouldn't be too difficult to find out, sir.
No, you're wrong there. I've already tried, without making it look too obvious, of course. Nobody seems to know. Well, they're not saying, anyway.
Have you spoken to Lee about it?
Yes, I haven't got nowhere. He won't say a word about anything. His lawyer, his accomplices, the robbery. He might as well be deaf and dumb.
Will Farrow be able to get him off, sir?
I don't think so. Keeping quiet can have its disadvantages as well. You don't incriminate yourself, sure, but you don't clear yourself either. Unless I'm very much mistaken, Norman Lee is going to get a nice long stretch. It's the others I'm interested in, and what's more, I'm going to get them.
On February the 2nd, Lee is found guilty of the charges laid against him and sentenced to 10 years imprisonment. Although Lieutenant Brenton visits him several times at the jail, he still refuses to name his accomplices. By this time, Brenton has discovered that it is Logan who paid for Farrow's services, but he can prove nothing. Nevertheless, he keeps visiting Lee once a month in an effort to wear him down.
You could earn yourself quite a bit of remission if you cooperated.
Get lost. Why don't you find someone else to go and visit? Don't you ever get tired of coming here?
I like you, Norman. I think you're being used. I wouldn't let them do this to me. Hello, Norman. Happy anniversary.
What do you mean?
You've been inside for a year now. Only another 9 to do? Some people are born suckers, and you're one of them.
Lieutenant Brenton is not Lee's only visitor. Logan also visits him occasionally in order to reassure him. In March, some 14 months after the night of the robbery, he once again visits the jail. He is told that Lee is not well and is asked to return the following week, which he does.
I've been in touch with a contact. He thinks we might be able to spring you in a few months.
That's what you said 6 months ago.
It's not easy. These things take time. I'll get you out as soon as I can.
And the money? What about my share?
The lawyer's fees were expensive, Norman.
He didn't get me off. Why did you pay him?
Lawyers aren't the sort of people you can play games with. Likewise, it'll cost quite a lot to spring you. Enough to buy a plane ticket out of here anyway.
You and your promises. I think you'll be quite happy to see me stay in here and serve my full time. Well, I'm warning you. You get me out of here within a month or I'll shop you.
If you do that, you're dead. I've got contacts in here as well, Lee. If you open your fat mouth, you'll meet with an accident before you've got time to close it again. That I can promise you.
All right, Logan, just stay where you are.
But who the devil are you?
You heard the lieutenant. Keep still.
I've been trying to nail you for 14 months. Now I've done it.
What are you talking about? Don't be so melodramatic, old boy.
There's a microphone in that lampshade. We were listening to everything you said in the next room. We've also got it on tape.
That doesn't mean a thing. It won't be admissible in court.
You're out of date, Logan. The law's been changed. I think I've got enough evidence now to get you. And you're going to help us, aren't you, Norman?
Now then, Norman, just think what you're saying.
I know what I'm doing.
Is this the way you repay my kindness?
Kindness? Don't make me laugh. You've only been talking to me for all this time to keep me quiet.
All right, Logan. Let's go. Let's see if you can talk your way out of this one.
At the trial, James Logan, known to the underworld as the Governor, was jailed for 12 years for robbery. William Thompson was found guilty of the same charge and sentenced to 10 years imprisonment.
They prowl the empty streets at night, waiting, in fast cars, on foot, living with crime and violence. These men are on duty 24 hours out of every 24. They face dangers at every turn, expecting nothing less. They protect the people of South Africa. These are the men of squad cars.
Okay.
Listen again next Friday evening to another dramatic story in our authentic South African police series, Squad Cars. Squad Cars is directed by Colin Fish and produced by David Goodman. We'll be right back.